Motzi Shabbat to rush up here so that we could leave our Tisro and some Shabbat, which is what we came for.
Thank you very much. Thank you. If we can just pass these along, that would be great. Thank you. My name is Yehoshua Grunstein. It's a pleasure to be here. I have to admit, I didn't rush here. I actually live in Efrat, so I thank you for the compliments, but I don't think I deserve it. It's actually a pleasure to spend Motzei Shabbos Chanukah with you for two main reasons. Number one, I actually work in the office right on the other side of that door, and I rarely get a chance in my capacity here to teach Torah. I'm the director of training and placement for rabbis and educators of the Strauss Amiel Institute. What we basically do is we take 25 families that we believe are outstanding, and we send them to various positions around the world, either in the realm of education or in the realm of the rabbinate. And as everyone here knows, there's many positions in between the two, like director of education, outreach director, or whatnot. So what I basically do on the other side of that door most of the time is make a lot of phone calls, send a lot of emails, look around, look at CVs and contracts and whatnot. And it's rare that in this capacity I'm actually able to teach Torah. So I want to thank you for allowing me to actually teach Torah in the place that I work. That's a rarity in my sense. The second reason it's a pleasure to be with you is because, thank God, this room and this particular guest house has the pleasure of welcoming many groups throughout the year, but I have not yet seen a group like yours. If I understand correctly, I look... You'll hear in a minute. You'll hear in a minute. If I understand correctly, you came to Israel for one reason, to learn. You didn't come to Israel to tour, you didn't come to Israel to have a good time, unless Divrei Torah Lahana'an Itnu, then ultimately you're here to learn. And I really want to give you all the credit in the world for taking out days of work and for coming and spending some of your Hanukkah time actually learning in Eretz Yisrael. Of all the groups that came through this building, I think this is a first for at least me to know about. And it's really a pleasure to share some of your time, because I think that what you're doing is amazing. And I want to give you all the credit in the world for doing it. And I hope that you will go back this evening and share your experiences with many more congregations and synagogues. Because I believe what you're starting, if you're starting it, but I'm assuming you are, is a wonderful, wonderful venture. And therefore, I hope that you won't keep this to yourselves, but please boast. The gaiva, the mitat ha-gaiva doesn't apply here. Boast as much as possible and try to get as many congregations to do the same thing. I think it's wonderful. Anyway, I met some of you before, but I really hate giving a share without knowing who I'm talking to. So if you could just tell me your names quickly, and I understand everyone's from Stamford, so we don't have to ask where everyone's from here. So just your names, that would be great, in between the pizza. So, Vakasha.
Howard Wolf.
Howard?
Bob, sir.
Bob, I met, yeah?
Albert William Phillips.
Andy Quinn.
Chi Bernstein.
Randy Bernstein.
Tommy Cohen.
Sarah Monty Cohen.
Mm-hmm. Rabbi Cohen. Cohen.
My wife and
we're from Beit Shemesh.
Yeah.
You're from Beit Shemesh.
Yeah, right. we just came to tag along.
Ah, very good. Hope the pizza was worth it. Yuffie. Okay. So anyway, what I wanted to do with you tonight is to, if I understood correctly, David Katz told me to do what I can to send you off with a message from Efrat, because I understand that from this very pizza party, this Malava Malka, you're on a plane. So ultimately, I'm going to try to do that. And before I try to do that, I just want to say one small word of introduction. It will take me exactly 1 minute. There's an old saying that says that Torah is totally pure, and ultimately all you have to do is teach it, and your own reflection, your own insights, doesn't find its way into Torah. Torah is objective. All you got to do is learn it and convey that objective idea to other people. But I think everyone here knows, especially if you're part of a learning club back in Stamford, that when you learn, you ultimately bring yourself into what you're learning. If you're working in a certain profession, then you see through the words of Torah your own profession. And it's very hard to detach your own subjective point of view from what you're learning. So you may hear tonight things that come from my point of view in my work here. My work here basically involves training rabbis and educators, placing them in various positions, and ultimately trying to escort them and to coach them in their positions once they're there. So thank God I have a cell phone and I have email, and they ring at every moment of the day because of the time differences around the world. We have rabbis in the Philippines and in Australia on the one hand, and rabbis in America and in South America on the other. So ultimately, part and parcel of my work is actually seeing their shilas on the one hand, and their dilemmas, and their difficulties, and their challenges, and thank God their successes as well. So what you could probably hear tonight is that reflection in the sugya we're going to learn here together about Havdalah. So that was my word of introduction, and let us begin. When I travel around the world and I see communities, the majority of the communities I see personally are Orthodox in name only. Now, have you ever seen such a community?
No.
Never. Never existed. I was a rabbi in a community. I will remain nameless. It was an Orthodox shul, bima in the middle, mechitza, the works. I was the rabbi, and I don't look that, I think, I look a little Jewish at least. We had 5 Shomer Shabbos families and a membership of 175 families. So those are the kind of communities that I've seen. And I always ask the question to the rabbi or to the leadership, what is the biggest boundary, the biggest brick wall between leading a Torah lifestyle and ultimately the people in your community? Because there seems to be a very big gap. And I want to answer that question tonight by sharing with you a certain idea about Havdalah. Now my time is
8:30.
Okay, no problem. That's fine. No problem. Seder Gamor. If you look on your source sheet, you can see right on the top of the source sheet, I quoted from a book by Howard Jacobson that I don't necessarily suggest people to read. It's not the most kosher book in the world, but I believe the following statement is extremely true and should be shared. Says Howard Jacobson in a book, and whether you light the candle and shake the spices or you don't, you cannot call yourself a Jew unless the concept is written on your heart. Says Howard Jacobson, who's not exactly an Orthodox Jew, to say the least, that in order to be a good Jew, you have to say Havdalah. You have to fulfill this mitzvah of Havdalah. And to be totally intellectually honest, he's not alone, because Chazal said the same thing. If you look at the next source on your source sheet, you could see that in the Gemara, in Maseches Pesachim, that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan says. Says Rabbi Yochanan, Shlosha minocholei ha'olam haba. There are 3 people that are going to get a good world to come. Who are they? Now, before looking at the rest, I'm sure you already looked at the rest, but pretend you didn't. Who would you put on the list?
Tzadikim.
People that worked very hard on themselves in order to attain amazing personality. I agree. Who else?
Those who work at
Tzibur. Or Sekhbet Tzarech Tzibur, absolutely devote themselves to the community and not just to themselves.
Someone
that was Moser Nefesh for the Jewish people. Fortunately, we lost a student in a recent tragedy up north. We lost a graduate, actually. He was a rabbi in the jails, actually. That was his job, and he was on that bus that overturned. And unfortunately, we lost a graduate. It's the first time our institute actually lost a graduate. These kinds of people would be on the list. But if you look on the list, we're 2/3 correct. The last third of this list doesn't make sense to me. Hadar be'eretz Israel, whoever lives in Israel, and I don't have to tell you, and I am now sitting, I made Aliyah, I believe the family sitting next to me made Aliyah, I think we can both agree that with all the attributes of Israel, it's not easy to live here, right?
Yeah, it's blessed.
It's a blessed, but it's not easy. Living in Israel is not an easy thing to do, and these are the people that can get a good world to come. Number 2, HaMegadel B'Nagel Talmud Torah. You're able to see continuity in your own family in terms of the realm of learning Torah. Let's face it, you're in a learning club, and I think it would be the biggest nachas to you if you see your children, when they get married, being in a learning club. That's wonderful. Now, what's the third thing on the list? Hamavdil al hayayin b'motzei Shabbatot. Whoever makes Havdalah on wine on Motzei Shabbos. So let's just put our perspective straight here, in terms of ratio and perspective. Living in Israel, ensuring that your kids continue the holy tradition of Torah, and what's the third one? Making Havdalah on wine. The Gemara asks, because obviously this doesn't seem equal, Mahi, what are you talking about? the mishayer mikidusha la'avdalata. If you don't have enough wine at home, you're able to leave a little over from Friday night Kiddush in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Havdalah after Shabbos. Does anyone see a problem with this Gemara? Screaming out at you. What's the problem? Hmm? First of all, we don't leave wine over. I'm like you. Pardon? Exactly. In other words, you're taking living in Israel, ensuring continuity of the Jewish people in your own family, and you're putting it on the same parcel of the latter as making Abdullah. Now, I hate to say this, but I'm going to be extremely honest with you tonight, that I have been with many groups, not all of them Orthodox, when they come to Israel, when they're not in Israel, and they love making Abdullah. I've been to camps, Jewish camps, in America, in North America in general, and even in Europe, where they don't exactly mekayim all the mitzvot during the week, but Havdalah they do. Havdalah is not such a big deal to do. You take wine, you take spices, you take the candle, you make Havdalah. How can that be on the same level as ensuring continuity and living in Israel? I want you to keep that question in your minds, and I want to do what a good Jew does, and that is to answer this question with a good question. I'll try to give a good question. Havdalah, that mitzvah. Everyone here did Havdalah tonight because you're all eating. Right? Good assumption. Gentlemen, ladies, Havdalah makes no sense. I'll tell you why. We have special mitzvot on special days of the year. We're in the middle of Hanukkah, so we have a special mitzvah. What's the mitzvah? Hadlakat Neirot, the candles, and Pirsum Anes, and Hallel and Oda. You come to Sukkot, it's a special day, you have mitzvot. What's the mitzvah? Sukkah and Lulav. You can go on and on. Anytime it's a special day, whether it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, we have special mitzvot with that day. On the other side of the same coin, if there's a very sad day, we also have specific mitzvot and obligations. Tisha B'Av, we ultimately act like Avelah. We say keynote. We read Eicha. Special days, whether happy or sad, get special mitzvot, get special attention. Shabbos that we just went through was a special day. Now we got to Motzei Shabbos, correct? What did we do? Shabbos is over, the special day is finished. Now what? We began Sunday, and there's a special mitzvah on Sunday. How can that be? Sunday shouldn't be different than Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. It's not a special day. It's exactly the same like the day afterwards. If we take this week, if tonight is the fourth night of Hanukkah, tomorrow night's going to be the fifth night of Hanukkah, the obligation will be the same. You have to light candles and say Hallel. So how can it be that we have a special mitzvah on a non-special day? Excuse my lousy English. How can we have a mitzvah on Sunday? Shabbos is over. I can understand on Shabbos you have to make Kiddush and sing Zmiros and have a longer davening. But Motzei Shabbos, Shabbos is over. How can there be a mitzvah when it's not a special day? And if you look at the text of the Havdalah in the next source on the sheet, I quoted it from the Rambam, you all know it. The text of the Havdalah seems to be very, very strange. Because if all we want to do is to say Shabbos is finished, then it would be good enough to say Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. But what do we Jews do? We always like to make things longer than they have to be. So, in a typical synagogue, not only is there davening, there's also a sermon. That's the way I make a living. I'm sure your rabbi makes a living that way. That's the way many of my graduates make a living. There's a president's announcements. There's many other additions. But the actual mitzvah of Havdalah should be a simple one. If all we want to do is say Shabbos is finished, for example, you can't make Havdalah, what do you say? Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. So if you can take a cup of wine and the whole thing, you should have said Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol. Finished. But instead, we have a whole Megillah. Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'chol, Ben Ol L'choshech, Ben Yisrael Amim. God, you make all these divisions in the world between Jews and non-Jews, between light and day, between this and that. What does this have to do with anything? So the first question is, how come Sunday warrants a special mitzvah, it's not a special day? And the second question is, how come Abdullah is so long? It could have been shorter. In order to answer both these questions, let us continue. I think to answer these questions, we have to just ask ourselves another very simple definition, and then we can answer the questions. Definition is as follows. Is Avdolah Motzei Shabbos Mida Oraisa or Mida Rabbanan? Is it biblical or is it a rabbinic obligation? If you look in the sources now, we would go through them, but unfortunately because of time we won't go through them directly. We'll just look at them and glance at them. This is a very big machloket, a very big difference of opinion between the Rishonim, the primary interpreters of the Gemara. The Gemara says in the next source on the sheet, in Meseches Pesachim, Tana Rabbanan, Zachor Jom HaShabbat L'Kodesho. Zachor HaLayayim. When you remember Shabbos, you do it on a cup of wine. Ein liyela bayom. This is during the day, because it says Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho. Balayla minayin. How do you know you have to make Kiddush at night? Tamud lomar, Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho. So the Gemara says you have to do something over a cup of wine at night and in the day. The big question about interpreting this Gemara that bothered the Rishonim is a very simple question. Night and day. What does that mean? There could be two options. What are the options? What's day? What's day? During the day of Shabbos, right? So this morning. And what's night? What do you say to me? Motzei Shabbos. So you have to make Abdullah, you have to do something over a cup of wine on Shabbos, and you got to do something Balayla after Shabbos, right? That's option number one. What's the second option? Friday night and Shabbos day. This is exactly the machlokas and Rishonim we're about to see. Comes along the Rambam and says, in a very explicit way on the right side of the sheet, you have to make Kiddush at the beginning of Shabbos and at the end of Shabbos. Kiddush at the beginning of Shabbos is called in Jewish Kiddush. Kiddush at the end of Shabbos is called Havdalah. Same side of the coin. He took this Gemara and he said that option. It means day on Shabbos, night after Shabbos. And therefore, if you look at the wording of the Rambam, it's beautiful. Mitzvah.
One mitzvah, two parts.
That's right. One mitzvah, two part. Mitzvah mina Torah, mitzvah to say mina Torah, biblical commandment, to say something over wine, both at night, Biknisato uviyitziyato. Shabbos comes in, Shabbos goes out. Says the Rambam, it's a first of all a biblical commandment. Second of all, you mekayim it, beginning of Shabbos, end of Shabbos. You sandwich in Shabbos. Part of the sandwich on top is Kiddush at night. Other part is Kiddush at the end of Shabbos called Havdalah. Got it?
When okay. You say day, you mean Friday night?
Yeah. Shabbos. It means on the day of Shabbos. A whole group of Rishonim disagree.
Said,
yeah.
That being said, then, why is there not an issue with Rabbi Yochanan for Kiddush and Havdalah?
Pardon?
With Rabbi Yochanan.
Right. We'll get to that in a minute. We're getting there. Very good question. Comes along a whole group of Rishonim and disagree with the Rambam on both accounts. First of all, they take this Gemara and they say, Yom and Laila does not mean beginning of Shabbos, end of Shabbos, but rather it means night of Shabbos and day of Shabbos. What we call at night Kiddush and what we call during the day Kiddush, right? The Kiddush after Shul during the day and the Kiddush after Shul at night. The second disagreement with the Rambam is they believe that while Kiddush at night is a biblical obligation, Midoraisa, the Kiddush at the end of Shabbos, quote unquote, Havdalah, is Midirabana. So you cannot take this source and say, Zachorat Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho, as it sounds, what Zachorat Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho mean? Remember the Shabbos day. The Shabbos day is over. We are now on Saturday night. We're now on the beginning of Sunday. So ultimately, this Gemara has nothing to do with Avdalah. It's talking about Shabbos. Shabbos is over. Now we get to Motzei Shabbos. We're at Motzei Shabbos. We have a new mitzvah, Havdalah. If you look on the left side of the sheet, you'll see this is the opinion of the Rosh, the Rabbeinu Tam, Tosfot Harid, and finally the Magid Mishneh, who wrote an interpretation on the Rambam. They all say Havdalah is Miderabbanan. It's rabbinic. It is not biblical. And if you turn the page now, I would like to explain the difference of opinion between the two. Because I believe that the difference of opinion is not just technical,
how do you explain that Gemara? But rather, it's fundamental as to their understanding of Havdalah. Comes along the Rambam and says it's biblical, because according to the Rambam, you have to sandwich in Shabbos. Shabbos is a holy day. How do you show it's a holy day? You basically say something at the beginning of it, saying, hey, we're about to start a holy day. And then when you leave it, you say, the holy day is finished. You are exiting the holy day. Lahavdil elef alfei havdalot. If anyone here ever went up to Har HaBayit, which is a very big point of contention, if you ever went up to the Temple Mount, there's certain places where we can go today after going to the mikvah and wearing non-leather shoes. If you went in, then you'll see that when tourists go in, they say you're about to enter a holy place. And when they exit, the tour guide said, you have now exited the holy place. If you don't want to go to the Temple Mount, you can see it at the Kotel. So ultimately, you're going into a holy day of Shabbos. You're going into this bubble called Shabbos. You say Kiddush. You're leaving. You say you're leaving. So according to the Rambam, it's just two sides of the same coin. You're sandwiching in the holiness. But if you say that it's not both Midoraisa, it's not biblical, but rather one is biblical, one is rabbinic, then that would lead me to believe that they're two separate things. Kiddush is Kiddush. You say Shabbos is holy. But according to all those that disagree with the Rambam, Havdalah is a mitzvah of Sunday. It's not a mitzvah of Shabbos. It's not a way of saying Shabbos is over. It's a mitzvah of Sunday. It's a separate mitzvah altogether from Shabbos. To paraphrase it, according to the Rambam, when you look at Havdalah, it's the end of Shabbos. According to all those that disagree with the Rambam, how would we define Havdalah? The beginning of the week. According to the Rambam, it's the end of Shabbos. According to all those that disagree, it's the beginning of the week. Now, if that's true, then I understand what Havdalah is. We saw the Gemara. I know what Kiddush is. Achorat Yom HaShabbat L'Kodesho. Remember the Shabbos day, holy day. Now I want to understand what Havdalah is, because it's the beginning of the week. If you look at the next source on the bottom here, on the left side, Masechet Shavuot, Daf Yudchet Amud Bet. Masechet Shavuot brings a very interesting Gemara. Kol HaMavdil Al HaYayin B'Motzei Shabbatot, Havin Libanim. Whoever makes Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos will have many children. And the Gemara quotes the following pasuk: Lahavdil ben hakodesh uben hachol uben hatamei uben hatahor. To make distinctions between what and what? Holy and mundane. What's next? Tamei and tahor, which means what? Huh? Pure and impure, right? You make all these distinctions, you'll have a lot of children. If that is the source of Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, as many of these Rishonim pointed out, then this leads me to believe the following. Havdalah is the beginning of the week. It's the first statement a Jew makes when he leaves the bubble called Shabbos. It's the first mitzvah that leads you into the week. You're now exiting Shabbos, you're beginning the week. Now when you say you're beginning the week, what does that mean to you? I'll tell you what it means to me. It means that I have an obligation now to turn on my computer and see which emails came in. It means that I'll now be exposed to the radio with all the good stuff that the radio has, but on the other hand, the trash that's on the radio. It will necessitate us to actually open the internet, and I don't have to tell you that the internet is full of Divrei Torah, but it's also full of things that I wouldn't necessarily call Divrei Torah. We are now leaving the bubble of Shabbos into this world. And this world has a lot of struggles, has a lot of challenges, has a lot of things that are very hard to deal with. How did the rabbis tell you to start the week? Assuming again it's a rabbinic obligation? Havdalah, the mitzvah. But what should you say in Havdalah? A long Havdalah, not just HaMavdil ben Kodesh L'chol. Finished. Shabbos is over. HaMavdil ben Kodesh L'chol. Ben Or Lechoshech, Ben Yisrael Amim, Ben Yom Hashvi L'Sheshet Yemei HaMaaseh. If I take all that, how would I define Havdalah? It's a statement of saying, I will make what? Havdalot. How would you say that in proper English? I'm about to make
distinctions.
I'm about to make distinctions. I'm going to make distinctions between the trashy sites on the internet and the good sites on the internet. I'm about to make distinctions between TV shows and TV shows that I'm never going to watch. I'm going to make distinctions between articles in the newspaper I'm going to read and articles that I dare not read. I am about to enter the week. And the most important thing a Jew has to say when he enters the week is that I will have to make distinctions. I won't eat everything out there. I won't see everything out there. I refuse to allow everything into my home. And on the other hand, I'm going to allow other things into my home. And I'm going to see certain things in this world. And I am going to expose myself to the big world out there. I'm not going to live in a bubble and stay there. I'm actually going to go out in that world and make distinctions. Just like I make distinctions between the holy, the pure, and the not pure. Between the mundane and the holy. I don't mix them up. I'm not going to say that this box is holy, just like the Aron Kodesh. I make distinctions. So the same way I go onto the internet, and I'm not going to say I'm not going to look at the computer. It's tame, it's terrible. But the computer has great, wonderful things, and it has trash as well. Make distinctions. Ultimately, this, in my opinion, is the fundamental struggle of almost every single Jew I've met around the world. When they talk about a Torah lifestyle, they always think that that means that you shut out the world. You're no longer part of the world because you lead a separate lifestyle. What I believe they fail to understand is we're definitely part of the world, with one caveat. With one little caveat. We don't accept the world at face value. We make distinctions. The way I believe, you make sure to have internet, but you teach your children to make distinctions between websites. You have TV, and you teach your children to make distinctions between TV shows. You make sure the newspaper comes in, and ultimately you make distinctions. Now, you could say it's much easier to do the opposite. The opposite is, don't let any of this in. But I think everyone here knows, and I hate to be the one to let you know, but I'll tell you anyway, if you don't let the TV into your home, then the trash will come in through your internet. And if you decide not to have internet nor TV in your home, then of course, where is it going to come in through? The cell phone. And if you don't allow all three, then, I hate to say this, but your neighbor will have it, and your kids will go play there. If you think about it, we cannot shut out the world today. The only way to survive as Jews in this world is to develop a sixth sense. God gave us five, now we have to develop a sixth. What's the name of this sense? Distinctions. And therefore, Havdalah is a rabbinic commandment. It has nothing to do with Shabbos. It's a mitzvah of Sunday. It's a mitzvah of beginning the week. And when we begin the week, we make a statement. The statement is, we will make distinctions this week. Because if we don't, then God forbid, we'll accept everything out there. And we all know that out there, there's things we shouldn't accept. And now you can understand the Gemara we began with. How did we begin? We began with Howard Jacobson and the Gemara that says that living in Israel and ensuring continuity is on the same level as making Havdalah. Now do you understand why it's on the same level as making Havdalah? Because if you are willing and able to internalize the message of Havdalah, namely, I will make distinctions, I will make these distinctions, then ultimately you'll be able to lead a beautiful, pure Torah lifestyle in a world full of struggles and challenges. If you're not able to, then ultimately it will be very difficult for you to leave the bubble of Shabbos. But the Gemara was precise. What did the Gemara say? Not just make Havdalah, but how to make Havdalah? On wine. Do I have to tell you how dangerous wine is? And do I have to tell you how beautiful wine is? Wine can lead to the most horrendous things in the world. If you get drunk, I don't have to tell you what happens, especially if you get behind the wheel. On the other hand, I can't turn away from both our own tradition as well as just common sense that wine is wonderful. You sit at a meal with friends and you have a little wine, it opens people up. The Gemara says in Masechet Sanhedrin that wine was created in order l'nachem bo avelim, to give wine to people sitting shiva. Wine is how we begin Shabbos with Kiddush. Wine is how we ultimately say the brachas under the chuppah, at a pidyon haben, at a bris, etc., etc. Wine is wonderful. Wine can be terrible. The same wine that the brothers drank together in this week's Parsha of Miketz, and it was wonderful, vayishtu, vayishkeru, imo, is the same wine that led to what it led to with Noach after the Mabul. It's the same wine. But it depends how you drink it. If you make a distinction and say, I'm going to drink this much wine, and it will open me up, and it will be wonderful, then that's great. But if you just accept wine and just drink it like it's going out of style, and last week I was in Italy, and believe me, that was very hard not to do, to actually have the limitations, I could promise you that ultimately it could be horrendous. And therefore the Gemara is precise. If you're able to say, I will make distinctions, and what is the most dangerous thing? Wine. I'll drink it, but I won't get drunk on it. Then ultimately, you'll be able to struggle successfully with the internet, with the TV, and whatnot. And this, of course, leads me to a practical ramification between the Rambam and all the rest. What happens if you don't make Avdallah? You forgot. You're catching a flight tonight. Which flight are you taking?
1 o'clock.
The 1 o'clock in the morning flight. So you're very tense, you have to leave, you get packed up, Shabbos ended late, you get to the airport, they make you nuts with security, you get on the plane, you're on the plane, you get back to America, you're famished, you're jet lag, whatnot, it's Sunday, people want to have a barbecue. Well, not in America, I'm thinking Israel, we have a drought. No barbecues in December. But gentlemen, ladies, you forgot to make Abdullah. What's the halacha? First of all, you can't eat. But assuming you forgot, you ate, what are you going to do? Do you still make Abdullah? Yeah. Till when? Till Tuesday. Okay. If you look in the bottom of your source sheet, you'll see the Shulchan Aruch brings two points of view. One is until Tuesday, the other is until Sunday. I believe it's exactly the two points of view. If all you want to do is sandwich in Shabbos, then Shabbos, sandwiching in, can only last till Sunday. Because once you finish Sunday, what are you going to say? Hamavdil ben Kodesh l'chol Shabbos is over, you're already in Monday or in Tuesday. Sunday, it's still Shayach, that it's connected to Shabbos. So that's one point of view in the Shulchan Aruch. But if it's Midirabanan, and the whole idea is to begin the week and say, I'll make distinctions, well, to say that statement, it's as irrelevant on Sunday as it is on Monday and on Tuesday. If you already got to Tuesday and you didn't say it, then lost cause for the week. You've already been exposed to the internet and to the TV, and hopefully you'll be successful, but it's a little too late. And allow... Yeah, Tzvi.
I was just going to say that also your explanation gives a nice chat to the Gemara in Shulis also, which says, you'll have good children.
That's right.
In other words, if you make the distinction as you're passing that on to your children, you make good choices.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Shkaya. In other words, if you're able to say that, then your children will continue, because you're not saying shut out the world, live in a bubble until you're 18 and you get married. Live in this world. Get out there. See what's out there, but have a sense of distinction. Just like when you go to the supermarket, you check for echsherim, that's the same thing you should do when you open the computer. Don't block it off. Ahefech. Open it up, but have a sense of distinction. And this leads me to what I believe is one of the messages of Hanukkah. If you turn to the last page, and we'll end with this, I believe that this is one of the messages of Hanukkah that we're in the midst of. If you look at the halachos of lighting a menorah, the halacha that keeps on coming up, that we've broken our heads and pens on, is the halacha of one word, bayit. What's bayit mean? Home. For some reason, during Hanukkah, we have this struggle. On the one hand, we have to publicize the miracle, but on the other hand, we have to do it where? Connected to the home. Connected to the home. If you look at the Gemara, for example, in Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara brings the whole story of Hanukkah and eventually brings the halacha of Bayit. If you look in the second source on the page, you'll see, I quoted from the Shulchan Aruch, exactly what you do. You're supposed to put the menorah outside your door, and if you can't, in the window, and if you can't, on your table. Now let me ask you, if you really want to publicize the miracle, shouldn't we all be lighting Chabad menorahs? Right? Times Square, middle of the town, middle of the parking lot. We should all find a corner, every Jew, and ultimately light the menorah there. Why do we have to light it connected to the home? In my opinion, that's exactly one of the ways we show that the Yevanim didn't necessarily succeed, and we did. We want to show that the Jewish lifestyle means you can ensure that holiness can even enter your own home. Yes, your home has magazines, and your home has TV and internet, but your home can also be a holy place, as long as you make distinctions. What do we have on every doorpost in our home? A mezuzah. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that anything you do in that bedroom should be ra'ui. How do you say that in English?
Fitting
to the mezuzah on the door. You're not embarrassed in front of the mezuzah. Ha'hefech, what you're doing in that room is fitting for the mezuzah on the door. And therefore, on Hanukkah, as much as we want to publicize the miracle, one of the ways we ultimately say we won is by ensuring that a holy vessel from the Beis HaMikdash, the menorah, is going to be where? In our own homes. As long as you make distinctions, then it could be ra'ui for your own home. The home has many things. Not everything in the home is a sefer Torah and a bima. It's not a shul. It's a home. But ultimately, it could be a holy place if you make these distinctions. And if you look at the source that begins the whole story of Hanukkah on the top of this page, I don't know why I asked my secretary to do it opposite. She did it this way. Okay. She's still a good secretary. My Hanukkah, the Gemara asks, gives the whole story. The Yevanim came in, they went into the Beis HaMikdash, and eventually they found the one little pitcher of oil, and everything was great. Great. That's the first paragraph in the Gemara. What's the very next paragraph in the Gemara? What does it talk about? It doesn't talk about Hanukkah, by the way. What does it talk about?
Damage.
What happens if a spark flies from the anvil and causes damage? The Gemara talks about damage that can emanate from what? From fire. From a spark. And with the recent events in Israel, I'm sure you understand that we don't even know how it started yet, but ultimately we're going to find out. Fire is dangerous. So before the Gemara even brings the halachos of the menorah, which is right after this particular passage, the Gemara says fire could be dangerous. Fire could destruct. But on the other hand, what could fire do? Construct. Have you ever seen a factory that doesn't have a chimney with smoke coming out of it? Fire could be the most amazing things to develop, the most amazing inventions. But fire could be dangerous. How would we ensure that it constructs and doesn't destruct?
Control,
choices, and distinctions, limitations. That's the way we deal with it. We don't say fire is bad, let's stay away from it. We say fire is good as long as you take precautions. I could see right here, we're in the lobby of the hotel, and this is where you lit the menorah. You didn't light it in your room because you took precautions. The bottom line is, anything in the world can be wonderful, but it can also be terrible. What's the word that will make it wonderful and not terrible? The word is distinctions. If we are smart enough to make these distinctions, then we don't have to say no to the world, but we can say yes to the world, as long as we develop this sense of distinction. So therefore, as we begin the week with a statement. The statement is, HaMavdil ben Kodesh L'chol. Just like we're making a distinction between Shabbos and the week, we're going to make many more distinctions, and therefore the text of the Havdalah is not just about Shabbos ending. It goes on and brings everything. And ultimately, if we continue to make these distinctions, then we'll be able to deal with the world out there. I wish you a very safe flight home and a happy Hanukkah. We should hear B'sorot Tovot. Thank you.